Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
The FIA World Endurance Championship on RS1.
On RS1.
Part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
A very warm welcome, everybody, to our continued coverage of the FIA World Endurance Championship, live here on the Radio Show Limited network of channels. Delighted that you could be part of this qualifying session, which is due to start within the next 10 minutes. So very exciting times indeed. We've already had sessions galore for these cars, which, of course, are heading to the Portimao, to the Algarve International Circuit for the first time in World Endurance Championship history. So yet another track to tick off as far as this particular part of racing is concerned, which stretches back to 2012. That was the inaugural season of the WEC, and there have been various iterations of where the races fall within the order since then. Of course, the super season that spanned two calendar years, and then the next version of that. But because of the pandemic, we're now back to a more traditional summer season. We've had three free practice sessions for the cars already, 90 minutes worth yesterday, a 90-minute session early this morning, which started at 9:35, and then an hour-long session, third free practice session, which was a 2 o'clock till 3 o'clock session. Remember that Portugal runs to Western European summertime, so it's currently 9 minutes to 6 in the evening, and therefore we are now 9 minutes away from a 10-minute qualifying session, first of all, for the GT cars. Then there'll be 10 minutes off before the LMP1, there's the first slip of the year, the hypercar and the LMP2s will head out onto track for the second 10 minutes, and that'll be 20 past 6 through till 6:30. Amazingly, I managed to get through the whole of the first round of the championship at Spa-Francorchamps without mentioning those four digits, LMP1, because, of course, that is a thing of the past, although we do still have a grandfathered LMP1 car on the grid. So delighted you could join me, Johnny Palmer, and also, like last time, John Hindhoff is joining me for company. We'll do a little bit for tomorrow as well, where we'll have Bruce Jones on board for the 8 hours of Portimao. But John, already under our belts, some very interesting sessions this weekend.
Yeah, very much so, with the LMP2 cars being right up there. At RSL underscore studio, there are a number of people who are tipping an LMP2 car for Paul. I think that is perhaps a little bit too much to ask for if you're an LMP2 supporter. Perhaps too optimistic. But we've heard plenty from Jim Glickenhaus in the last few weeks, both on Midweek Motorsport, on the Haggerty Inside Track Show, which is playing at the moment on rotation, the audio from it, and we'll have that to download as well. And indeed in our N24 coverage, saying, look, we're not there yet, but they were barely a second off Toyota. They're very happy. They have had some problems. But Jim Glickenhaus himself said, look, the P2s are going to be good here at Portimao. It is a proper old-fashioned roller coaster of a circuit. The straight is long on the front straight, but that's it. There's no other long straight for the LMHs, the LMH class cars, the global prototypes, let's call them, to get up to speed. Come Monza, next round things will be a wee bit different. And add to that, in terms of the Glickenhaus particularly as well, Johnny, this won't count for today, but certainly we'll see it tomorrow when Bruce joins us, is that the Glickenhaus car, the 007, is struggling to get two good, quick, consistent stints out of the Michelin tyres. Now, why? Because we know that Michelin build good tyres. Well, Michelin haven't had a car to build a tyre for until that car was rolled out. They did as much as they can in the virtual world, in CAD and in simulation. But the Glickenhaus is unique. In fact, actually, all of the three different cars represented in LMH are different, because you've got the Toyota, which is all-wheel drive with a hybrid. You've got the Alpine, which, as you said, Johnny, rightly so, is a recycled Rebellion from last year. And then you've got the Glickenhaus, which is built to the hypercar regulations, the LMH regulations, But it's only two-wheel drive and obviously doesn't have a hybrid. So they've all got different tyre solutions and Michelin are still working. They will get it right. But the P2s are all running on a tyre that they have run on for quite some time. And therefore, they are getting the longevity and the pace out of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. But also, tyre manufacturers, as far as WEC are concerned, don't have any modern experience of this place. Well, I suppose you could count testing, because this has been a favoured place, particularly yes. for Toyota, as they've been generating, or rather testing and developing their GR010 leading up to the start of this season's WEC. They've been spending a lot of time at Portimao, including, I think, at least one 30-hour test. 2009 yes. was the first ever Le Mans Series race here. That was just after the Algarve International Circuit opened, when Pescarolo took a victory with Jean-Christophe Bouillon and Christophe Tanso. There has been a victory for a Peugeot as well, but it was the Orica Matmut Peugeot 908. That was the following year. But then after that, this big gap of just no ACO rules racing held in Portugal, certainly not at this track anyway. There was, I think, some races at Estoril for the ELMS, but 2011 through to 2016 saw no ACO rules racing. Yes, the last ever Estoril visit, I think we were there. And then
that was the last for the LMP2 Open Top Cars, if you remember.
Yes. So that would have been 2016, which I believe was a Harry Ticknell championship year as well. The last time that the kind of proper Mighty 38 was featured within its open top form. We do have the Mighty 38 in its current iteration from Jota, the Orica 07 Gibson from the British team for Roberto Gonzalez, Anthony Davidson and Antonio Felix da Costa, who was fastest, by the way, in the opening practice session. We had this unusual sight of an LMP2 car topping FP1, a 133.752. But then the best of the hypercars was the Nicolas Lapierre-driven Alpine A480, the first of the technically hypercars. But, of course, we saw that car as a rebellion in 2020. So now only 3 minutes away from the start of the session. And this is going to be a busy first encounter for 13 GTEs, due to be 14, but we have lost one of the Team Project One cars. That is in relation to the problems encountered at Spa-Francorchamps, and still, I think, chassis damage being rectified for the sister car at Team Project One. They do have the 56 car here, which was involved very dramatically in the opening couple of seconds of the Spa-Francorchamps qualifying session, when Egidio Perfetti had a moment at the top of Radeon. But that's been fixed now, and he is joined by Matteo Cairoli and Riccardo Pera in the 56 car. And four GT Pros, because sadly, of course, no Corvette, although that featured at Spa. So two Porsches, two AF Corsa prepared Ferraris. Interestingly, though, John, the Porsche GT team have decided to use their third Le Mans driver this weekend, it being an 8-hour race. Whereas the Ferraris, well, Sam Bird will be tied up elsewhere in Formula E duty. I think they're in Mexico this weekend. There has been no announcement, actually, from AF Corsa regarding third drivers from Ferrari. But I am noticing, of course, the absentees this year being Bird and Davide Rigon. So might they be prized into the 51 and 52 cars in August? We'll have to wait and see. But Porsche aren't not necessarily going to be stretched in terms of drive time with three drivers each.
Just a quick note, at RSL underscore studio, use the hashtag RSLWEC. This from Shendu, who is in Leiria in Portugal. Rain falling there, or at least a light drizzle at the moment, saying, has the rain reached you at Portimao yet? It has not. It is a clear blue sky. It's been very warm all day today, although it is cooling off a little bit, but there's barely been a hint of the clouds that we saw early in the week. A little bit this morning, but they were blown away very quickly indeed. So at RSL underscore studio, if you want to get in touch with either Johnny or me, John Hindhoff. And it's going to be a session, JP, I think, particularly when we get to the prototypes, that we won't be able to take our eyes away from.
I agree, because whereas in the past these were 20-minute sessions, as in as recent as last year, and two drivers needed to be cycled through each car, it is now pick your fastest driver and set your fastest time as early as possible. You've got 10 minutes for each of the sessions. Now, that should allow time for a tyre stop if teams want it, because tyres are at a premium in Pro. I think the rule still in GTE Am is you can just keep chucking Goodyear, rather Michelin tyres at these cars as much as you like. So the
20 seconds, JP.
Okay.
In fact, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That's a very good Eduardo Freitas impression. Mightily impressed by that.
I could have done
that.
It better than that. I need to work on it.
Okay.
Oh,
slightly
the
more
children
Bond
of the night.
Yes.
What sweet, sweet music they make. I think that was Francois Perraudeau leading things out in the chrome silver Ferrari.
Well,
and we are underway, Jimmy.
Certainly the 83, rather, but I would be surprised if Francois's been put into the car.
It looks like his helmet, but
okay.
No.
You may be right.
I may be crazy. Called Billy Joel.
Indeed. I'm just trying to remember now whether the bronze has to be included, because if it is Perraudeau, that would supply us an answer regarding...
It is.
There you go. Right, so I reckon we're in course for all bronzes in this session. It's amazing when you've done a couple of European Le Mans Series races between the two. I often therefore forget that bronzes are an essential part, whereas before, last year... The bronze certainly had to be one of your drivers, and then there was a free choice for the others. So let's give you a rundown. You may well have that at your disposal quicker than I, actually, as far as starting drivers are concerned.
It is definitely Francois Perraudeau in the EF Corsa number 83. That is for certain. Let me see who else has gone out.
I've found the right page now. Yeah,
Thomas Fleur. Okay, yeah. Go on.
So Ben Keating in the 33 for TF Sport. He is the bronze. The 51 car will have James Calado and Daniel Serra in the sister car 52. Roberto Laccorte is in the 47 Cetelar Racing Ferrari 488. Then we got Thomas Fleur, as you've mentioned, in the 54 AF Corsa car. Egidio Perfetti in the Team Project 156 machine. Takeshi Kimura in the Kessel Racing 57. Iron Lynx have the 60 car with Claudio Schiavone. The 77 Dempsey Proton Racing car with Christian Reed. Francois Perraudeau, as you said, in the 83. Manuela Gosner in the 85 Iron Lynx machine. A terrible race, unfortunately, for the Iron Dames last time out in the ELMS, but she can put that behind her now with a race so quickly after last weekend. Mike Wainwright in the 86 GR Racing Porsche. Dominic Bastiat, the grand old age of 75, in the 88 Dempsey Proton Racing Porsche. And four more, two pro Porsches, Jimmy Bruni in 91, Kevin Estra in 92, Paul Dallalana in the 98 Aston Martin, and the 777 D Station Aston Martin is Satoshi Hoshino. So there you go.
Yeah, easy for you this year. Marcel Duc is hoping we'll get far fewer red flags than we had in Spa, sitting outside with some coffee to keep myself moving for IMSA tonight. Thanks, Marcel. On at RSL underscore studio, hashtag RSLWEC. Kevin Payne's tuned in. A lot of people have torn themselves away from the disaster that is the cricket at Edgbaston at the moment.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Don't. Just let's not even talk about it, JP. It is quite warm in the UK at the moment as well, so I think a few people just coming inside for a wee bit. Very pleasant here in terms of the track temperature at 35 Celsius, air temperature a beautiful 23.5. It is quite humid still though, nearly 60%. That has been going down though as Egidio Perfetti comes across the line, JP, to put a lap in.
Briefly, yellow flags on the racetrack, but I think that was a spin and continued because we haven't had to go any more severely with the quelling of this session. There is the option, of course, to go full course yellow should we require it. The 51 Ferrari pushing on. Oh, big, big lock-up into turn three there. And a spin as well for one of the AM Ferraris. That is Thomas Fleur in the 54 AF Corsa machine. So the silver car having to now turn around. That's the right-hander on the climb up to the after the rotunda on the left-hander before it, isn't it? So get your corner name in just a second, but it's spun all the way through the gravel track to the outside, and then as he's attempted to rejoin, almost got beached on the inner curb as well That could have been a lot worse had they been following cars. But unfortunately for everyone involved, Thomas Fleur is back into the session. It was at turn 8 that took place. So there's the right-hander, which is the turn 7, slightly higher speed, and then you really do leap on the brakes into a near hairpin at turn 8 before the track drops away from you at turn 9 and your stomach ends up in your mouth. You head through 9 and then into the double right-hander at 10 and 11 at the top of the hill. It's a spectacular lap. Obviously, this is not the time to be encouraging you to visit, but once all this madness is over, please, if you've never visited Portimao, do get there, because it needs to be witnessed by the naked eye to be fully believed, frankly. Has existed for just over a decade now. 141.134 for Perfetti in the 56 car, and only 0.007 of a second slower is the 83 car being driven by Francois Perrodo. So we would have said that Perrodo would be there or thereabouts. They, of course, lead the GTE Championship, GTE AM Championship, following their victory a few weeks ago in Belgium at Spa-Francorchamps.
Had a lap deleted for abuse of track limits. That was the number 83 EF Corsa, Francois Perrodo. We'll see a few of those. They'll be keeping an eye, a very weather eye, on that GP during this session, I would think.
Yeah, agreed. And the rule, certainly for the European Le Mans Series that Eduardo Freitas is employing, is that the white line is the edge of the track. You do not count curbs in ACO rules racing. So, yes, you can use the curb with two of your wheels, but you can't say, I had all four wheels on the curb there, but none of them on the track, and that's allowed. He does not see that the same way. So the Ferrari is very neat and tidy. This is the 52 Ferrari about to complete a lap. So Daniel Serra, very neat and tidy on the exit there of the final corner, straddling the curb, but making sure that the right side wheels were the correct side of the white line. Similar situation for Jimmy Bruni, who is able to cross the line and goes second fastest now. So Kevin Estre is quickest in the GTE Pro GT team prepared 911 RSR 19. Those are the cars all Porsches in both categories now have the 4.2 litre flat six, because as far as customer cars are concerned in AM, they are now permitted. The Pro cars are over a year old, having been debuted at Silverstone in September 2019. So Kevin Estre and James Calado first and second in Pro, followed by Jean-Marie Bruni in the 91 Porsche. Not yet seen a legal time, I don't think, from Daniel Serra. 138.743 may have been taken away from him, because it's not putting him as far up the order as I would have expected. So Porsche, Ferrari, Porsche. And then in GTE AM, Christian Reed has set a 140.770. So he's fastest in the 77 half black and half blue car, with the sort of checkered effect on the side of that Dempsey Proton Racing Porsche, and that is also illustrated by the fact that there is a single amber light on the side of the 77 Porsche as well. You get one for being first, second for being second fastest, and third for being third fastest, just like when we get to the race.
Oh yes, of course, of course. Kevin Estre at the top for Porsche in the 911 RSR for the Porsche GT team. I have to say, the resurfacing here has been outstanding. Done before Formula One came back here, last season now. It's a strange and troubled story for Portimao International Circuit. Built as a Formula One test track, had a couple of Formula One tests, and then Formula One out of season testing was banned. And in-season testing was bad, rather.
Yes.
So it was rather odd. But it's kind of reinvented itself as the go-to place for two and four wheels. And ironically, having not really been built to host a Formula One race, did have its first Formula One race last season with a bit of a crowd there as well. And it was a great success. It races really well. And if, as Johnny was saying earlier on, if you've never been to this part of Europe, it's fantastic. It's on the same time zone as the UK. It's pretty easy to get to. I've driven there a couple of times, as well as flown into either Faro or driven down from Lisbon, which is actually not a bad drive down as well.
No, it's nice.
And lovely. Really nice part of the world to be. And the track itself, if you get a chance to do a few laps, as we have done down through the years, do it. But don't have a big breakfast before you do it, particularly if you're going to be pressing on. Unless you don't mind it. If it's porridge, it's not so bad. It'll taste the same coming up as it went down.
Good point. No, but the section after turn five, you really do start to feel the gradient change, hauling up the hill through six and seven, then that dip at nine, as I've mentioned, and there's also a significant drop-off coming out of 11, as in it feels like you're driving off the edge of a cliff, and then through 12 and along the shelf into 13. Every type of corner pretty much around this place, but you're always fighting the gradient, and particularly when you have to go offline to dart around traffic. The Cetelar Racing crew waiting for their Ferrari to cross the line. At the moment it's the 56 Team Project One machine, though, that is out front. And is this a bit of redemption, you could say, from what happened at Spa-Francorchamps with Egidio Perfetti out of that session so early in Belgium? At the moment they are on the cusp of taking a pole position in the very next round. The 83 Ferrari of Francois Perraudeau, who leads the championship with teammates, they are looking at a sixth place start behind the 85 Iron Lynx Ferrari for Manuela Gosner, together with Michelle Gatting and Rahel Fry. But a number of cars already in, including the 92 of Kevin Estre. He set that time very early on in the session, actually. It was a 137.986 for the Frenchman. And none of the other three GT Pro cars are going to go faster than that. There are significant concerns, though, John, for Daniel Serra's Ferrari, which is stone last. It's still down there in 17th place behind all of the GTE AMs.
Yeah, I didn't see him go off. Mean he didn't, JP. But clearly something not right there. I'm scrolling through the race channel to see if he had a whole host of laps deleted, and I can't see that. I've only got that 138.743 for him. That's the best time. How bizarre.
So did he, after setting that initial time, actually just come into the pit? I'm just wondering whether, from the various screens I've got liberty to look at, whether I can tell how long his stint was, if you like, because if it was literally an out lap, a quick lap, and then an in lap with a problem. But I also did mention there was an early yellow flag which came to nothing. No, he is displayed in the pits here. So I wonder whether actually Serra's car was stranded out on track, but it looks like it's made it back to base.
Did four laps. JP. So that's an out lap, two quick laps, and an in lap.
Yeah.
And his best lap shown as a 144.377. Now, that's not what I just said on the race control channel. So maybe he has had some issues. He came in at 8 minutes past the hour, so he was out there. I've got him with a 38.7, and then I don't see that being deleted after that. Daniel Serra, 38.7 at 18.06 and 25 seconds.
Yeah.
So there's something not quite right. 83, we talked about. The 91 Porsches had a lap. 83, another lap. So two laps for the 83 Ferrari being deleted. So how very odd. Well, very odd indeed.
Daniel is not happy because as he loosened the belts, having brought the car in, there was a kind of cursory glance to his team on the right-hand side. These cars, obviously, it being a clockwise circuit, the pit lane is in the traditional spot with pit lane on the inside of the circuit with team, therefore, over your right shoulder. So the times, 137.986 for Kevin Estre in the 92 Porsche. The 51 Ferrari was 0.373 of a second slower. Then you had the 91 Porsche. James Collado, by the way, did the 51 Ferrari's best time. He was the only driver in that car in the 10-minute session. Jean-Marie Bruni, the 91 Porsche, did a 138.389. Pole position in GTE AM going to the only Team Project One Porsche that is here this weekend. We are expecting that to be bolstered to a two-car lineup in the next round from Monza, and then obviously on into the 24 Hours of Le Mans, which falls in August this year. The 56 car, quickest with a 139.186. Second fastest, Christian Reed, who briefly topped the session with his 77 Porsche 911 RSR 19. It was a 139.566 for the German, who was ahead of Roberto Lacorte. Good result for Cetilar Racing to be third in the metallic blue 47 Ferrari. Thomas Fleur, despite the spin, finished in fourth place in AM. His time was a 139.583, car 54. Manuel Agostner for Iron Lynx, car 85, was fifth quickest, ahead of Francois Perraudeau, sixth, with the 83 car leading the championship. But, I mean, you know, places on the grid aren't really a priority when we've got an eight-hour race to look forward to tomorrow. But there is a concern for Daniel Serra, not so much for the car, but exactly why he's potentially had laps taken away from him. It may be as simple as he breached the track limits and therefore times were deleted, and that's what you get.
Kevin Estra just saying that he did a few mistakes, he says, but he thinks everybody did in that qualifying session. Two laps that were fastest, good enough for fastest lap. So perhaps the testing that they've done over the last few weeks... they haven't. Porsche haven't been here, I think, since it was resurfaced, Johnny. They've got some experience if the test, and the track surface is for F1 rather than what they've been used to driving on in the past. So, poor position though for Kevin Estra, who's a happy man at the circuit.
At the Algarve International Circuit, indeed. So we have a double pole car now as well, because Estra did the business at Spa too. So these extra single points could be all that matters towards the end of the championship. The lead for the 92 Porsche over the 51 Ferrari heading to Portugal was 8 points. It's now grown to 9 points, therefore, over Alessandro Pierre Guidi and James Calado, with Daniel Serra and Miguel Molina, those that suffered presumably because of Daniel Serra's off-track exploits. That team start this weekend on 15 points, having finished third in the opening round. That was a six-hour affair, of course, at Spa. We're bolting on two extra hours this weekend because in recent years, the World Endurance Championship have toyed with different lengths of races, 6 hours, 8 hours, 1,000 miles, although we've only had one of those so far, and then also the, of course, 24 hours, which comes a little bit later on in the season. Six races this year. Fuji and Bahrain still on the calendar as things stand. Japanese visit in September, and then the final trip to Bahrain over the weekend of the 20th of November. But we now then turn our attention to LMP2, and remember that is two-pronged this year, both for Pro-Am driver combination and all pros, although in an all pro lineup you still need a silver. And
six different classes here this weekend.
Yes, exactly. That's what the headline writers will be putting down on the on the press releases, and quite rightly too. There's an official constructors championship, which is what we've just witnessed between Porsche and Ferrari as well, and the rest of the teams in the entry gunning for various teams championships too. But yes, crucially, six different classes. And
people are going to be wondering what we're talking about there, JP. So how about I go through them, shall I? So we've got GTE AM, which we've just seen Egidio Perfetti take the pole position for Team Project One. We've got GTE Pro, Kevin Estra, Porsche GT team in the 92 car. In LMP2, there is LMP2 and LMP2 Pro AM. So that's two classes there. And in LMH, we have two classes too, and they are listed as such on the timing. We have Hypercar and Hypercar H. So two entries, one for Alpine, one for Glickenhaus in Hypercar, and two entries both for Hypercar H for Toyota Gazoo Racing Team. Does that make sense?
It does to me. But yeah, you may have to have been following this championship for a little while to fully get the reasons why we are in, you know, the current iteration of WEC, and there's this slight mismatch, if you like, in the top class. But the idea is to try and equalise them as much as possible, and there have been some adjustments to the minimum weight of the cars. I can run through those quickly, because remember, it's 1066 kilos for the two Toyota GR010s.
Is that one in the eye for them? Because that's been put up.
Very good. But I'm trying to work in the word Bayer somewhere, but it might take me a while. marking 26 kilos increase from the opener in Spa. So each getting an extra 26 kilos. The Alpine, which is the A480, remember, that's gained 22 kilos, now running at 952. So still a big difference there between the non-hybrid Alpine at 952 and the full hybrid of the Toyotas at 1066. And then it's 1030 for the first race for the Scuderia Cameron Glickenhaus SCG 007 LMH, as it's called. So that's running at 1030 kilos, which is the lowest possible weight for a Le Mans hypercar. Quite a queue at the very end of the pit lane, and it wasn't all, the cars weren't all in the fast lane either. Some were stretching back onto the apron, so there was a bit of give and take there necessary.
I just let you know they go for used tyres first. Okay. Yeah, copy that.
That's by Conway talking to his race engineers.
Indeed.
So they're going to do a quick outrun and then come back in for new tyres by the sound of it. Or did he say, be careful because you've got new tyres?
I would be surprised if they're going to do an outrun purely because it's only 10 minutes. They might try and go for a quick one without the worry of having to change drivers during the session. Now, the Glickenhaus is out on track, and I could be forgiven for thinking I'm watching Le Mans in the 1970s. Frankly, the way that this thing looks, it is superb.
512, very 512-ish at the front with that white nose, very Ferrari with the gold wheels. We know Jim Glickenhaus has a great affinity for all things Ferrari, the irony being that by 2023 he might be racing against one, of course, at Le Mans. But it is, the proportions of it are quite extraordinary, particularly with the aero, the upward eye pointing aero on the top of the top element of the rear wing. Jim Glickenhaus has jetted down there to Portugal from Italy, because he went straight from the Nürburgring to Italy to where their factory is. And the development mule, which did the 30-hour test at Aragon, is being rebuilt, ready for its competition debut at Monza. He arrived just in time on Tuesday to come on our Haggerty Inside Track, which you can find if you search for that. He was actually checking into his hotel room as we started the show, but
excellent.
Such a great bloke, he stayed with us. Can we say this is its competition debut then? Because this, all right, we've had free practice and it's been out on the track, Johnny, but effectively this is the first session that a Glickenhaus 007 has done, SCG 007 has done, that has counted for anything in competition terms.
Yeah, this is the first competitive session, absolutely, because the other three were labelled as free practice. Now, okay, that definition is not quite as it was in the old days where you could kind of do anything you wanted and run tyres outside of the meeting regulations as well. But yeah, this is definitely something, you know, there's a championship point on offer here, which Glickenhaus could actually seal, depending on how good their pace is. And Toyota would need a bit of an off day, admittedly. But you can track the progress from the Glickenhaus through the sessions. The 007 LMH, first of all, from FP1, did a 134.7, compared to then a 133.8. And by free practice 3 earlier today, it had got down to a 131.9, which was faster than both of the Toyotas. So we could be in for a very interesting 7 or 8 minutes now. Amazing how much of a chunk of the session disappears purely from an outlap, though, for all of these cars. And this is what I mean about the Toyotas not really having that time in hand to do an outlap and then come back in again, maybe to switch the tyres diagonally. If they get a banker lap in early enough, there may be the option to come down pit road and switch to a new set of Michelins. We'll have to wait and see. Brendan Hartley, 132.888, 131.5, though, for Mike Conway. And that will put him easily fastest by nearly 0.2 seconds from the 34 LMP2 car, which is the Inter-Europol competition machine. Also out on track, the 31 Team WRT entry from Belgium, with success so far in the European Le Mans Series. They've taken 2 wins from 3 races. And the 41 car is going very nicely, 31 car, I should say, going nicely at this early stage, with Robin Frines installed for qualification duty. He's just done a 131.648. But Mathieu Vaxivière in the 36 Alpine A480 going fastest now. Make that now the 38 car quickest with Antonio Felix da Costa for Jota setting a 131.255. That was the car fastest in FP1, remember?
Glickenhaus, top of the class with Westy at the moment. This would be a story, an extraordinary story at the moment. Mathieu Vaxivière goes through for Alpine, 130.524. So that he's just gone a wee bit quicker. Meantime, in LMP2, the time's starting to speed up. No time to be messing about here, Johnny. You can't be, I suppose, in normal work terms, just, you know, I'll just have a cup of coffee and read the paper before I get into me dear. Nope, you've got to get cracking straight away, haven't you?
Yeah, 100%. So the time that I was sort of preempting there was the match of Vaxivière effort, which was a 130.524. That does stand for the Frenchman and for the French squad. So it's a 130.5 for the number 36 Alpine, the grandfathered hypercar. Then Mike Conway's effort, as there's a big lock-up for the Glickenhaus heading through the final couple of corners. That car being qualified by Richie Westbrook, as you said. That car is currently 22nd in amongst all of the times combined. 2.1 seconds away from the 36 effort, the Alpine, which is now heading through turns 11 and 12. And therefore into the final sector. 130.524 for Mathieu Vaxivière. Mike Conway is also onto a lap that could be very special because he's 0.4 seconds up on his previous effort. Only needs to find 0.16 seconds to go faster than the Alpine. The Team WRT car comes into the pits, as does the Alpine, interestingly. I wonder whether Mathieu Vaxivière could have done something slightly better with that time, but he's given it up, and it heads into pit lane with 3.5 minutes still to go. And Conway, too. Now, he was purple through Sector 2, but did Toyota work out that the first sector of that lap was so bad that he wasn't going to go any quicker to put that car on the other side of the front row? It is on the front row, crucially, but in second place, as Ollie Webb now comes out of turn 11 in the ARC Bratislava LMP2 car. But he's down on his previous efforts and significantly down, actually. This car is currently in ninth place in LMP2.
Another lap deleted. This for Alex Brundle into Europol. Track limits at turn one. Now, that's a one where you can run on. You don't really get much of an advantage there, but it's one of the places that Eduardo Freitas, the race director, has been watching. ARC Bratislava across the line. Ollie Webb going down towards turn one. Oh, new set of Michelins onto Westies Glickenhaus. And it looks like they're going for new tyres at Toyota Gazoo Racing as well.
Meanwhile, Paul de Resta in the number 22 United Autosports Orica is finding time. He's just gone 0.05 seconds faster than a previous effort last time, nearing the end of Sector 2 on this lap, which could be a decent one. 22 car is not currently featured in the top 10 when you combine the times from this session. I wonder whether that's a reason. That's because the previous laps have been deleted at this point. He's slower, though, through the middle sector. Lost about 0.3 through there for whatever reason. Track surface is clearly in very good condition. The track temperature at 34 degrees Celsius, ambient hovering around 23 currently. Maybe this late on in the evening, after quite a bit of sunshine today, the track surface is a struggle to find a decent time on it. He's a second away from the 36 Alpine's best effort, but that will put the number 22 car up to third in the LMP2 standings. Standings that currently see the 38 car from Jota fastest, a time set by Portuguese driver Antonio Felix da Costa.
Down into the last minute or so, Alex Brundle with the pressure on then in that 34 Europol car, in the Europol car. Can't miss it out on the track. Oh, another, plenty of cars having laps deleted. Lap 5 for car number 21. Car 20, lap 6. And I don't know why this is, Johnny, but Paul de Resta and the number 3... Who's in that at the moment? Paul de Resta is United Autosports, of course. Has there been a coming together with... the number 6 car. Has there been a coming together? Because they are under investigation. And I don't really know what's happened there.
That is very interesting.
I can't find a number 6 car.
No, nor could I. But I wasn't going to mention that. I couldn't find a 3 car either. But clearly there's been some contact with somebody. And race control will know all about it. 10 seconds left on the clock. I reckon Paul de Resta is going to squeeze one more lap out of this as he heads to the finish line. Remember, start line and finish line in a slightly different position on this start-finish straight in Portugal. But, yes, Paul de Resta did squeeze an extra lap out of it, which may be crucial.
Comes across now. Here comes Jota. No, not improvement for that fourth overall second in P2 for Antonio Felix da Costa.
But the sister Jota has improved, and that's Tom Blomqvist, which puts the 28 car above the 38 now. So it's actually a very good position for Jota to be in, running 1-2. The threat I see is from the 22 car of Paul de Resta, as I say, squeezing an extra lap out of the session, whereas neither of the Jota cars were able to do that, and both saw the checkered flag coming out of the final corner. Nearing the end of the lap is Mike Conway. He is half a second up now on his previous best, looking, as I say, to find the 16,000ths of a second that separate the number 7 Toyota from pole position. Otherwise, it'll be Alpine to take their first pole of the year. The checkered flag is out, and the 7 car, still waiting for it to cross the line to post the time, it's a 130.8, so it's not good enough. Very close indeed, but he did not improve. So 16,000ths of a second will be the gap as Mathieu Vaxavier, surely he is going to improve. He does go faster. Wow. It's a 130.1364, and that extended the gap briefly from the 7 Toyota, but the number 8 Toyota of Brendan Hartley has now crept into the gap. So Brendan didn't get pole, but he did outpace Mike Conway by about a second, I reckon. 0.094 of a second was the margin that Brendan Hartley fell short of Vaxivier's time, but he was faster than Mike Conway. The celebrations down at Alpine, though, can begin, because the first time this year, and for the first time for a grandfather car for a long time, I'd imagine, the Alpine A480 Gibson has taken pole position at round 2 of the season.
Now, that might not turn into an advantage in the race because they have fuel issues in terms of how far they can go on a stint. And it is, of course, an 8-hour race tomorrow, not the standard 6. It might mean at least one, possibly two extra stops for the Alpine. And that is where the P2s might just have a little bit of an advantage. They could be talking to some of the guys at the start of the weekend when they were doing their long runs, and from what they've seen on the simulations, the P2s, Johnny, could be doing as many as 3 stops fewer than the hypercars.
That's interesting. Well, generally,
the best of the hypercars.
Yes.
Than the Toyotas, excuse me.
Well, 45, maybe 46, 47 laps, depending on sort of laps, minutes, I mean, rather than talking about laps around this place. But 3/4 of an hour is generally the new distance for the new version of the LMP2s. Remember, there has been some speed adjustment year on year, 2020 into 2021. So confirmation of those times, because they all came in very quickly towards the end. The Alpine Elf Matmut A480, a 130.364 for Mathieu Vaxivier, 0.094 of a second off that was Brendan Hartley. He set that on his very final lap there, and the 0.082 of a second slower was Mike Conway, who for a long time was threatening to take pole position, and he's ended up third somehow. LMP2 pole taken by Brit Tom Blomqvist in his number 28 Jota Orica 07, a 131.210, ahead of the sister car from the British squad. Antonio Felix da Costa did a 131.2. The best Pro-Am car will be Jort van Aertert's Racing Team Nederland LMP2, the number 29, 131.545. They have won races previously, Racing Team Nederland, within LMP2. Paul de Resta, probably very disappointed with a fourth-place start in the 22 car when it looked a lot brighter than that mid-session. Robin Freins in the 31 team WRT car did a 131.6.
JP?
Yes.
Let's see if we can get a quick word with Nico Lapierre.
Nico Lapierre, a fantastic run by Matt there in the 36. And pole for you guys, the Alpine. Fantastic.
Yeah, great. First pole position for Alpine in the hypercar category. So that's a great feeling. Super drive from Mathieu. It was super tight in the end. So we put a second set of tires and he could push it to the limit and get a very nice lap time. We only had one lap time, so it was a question of not making any mistake or track limit. But yeah, super pleased with the pace of the car. Obviously, we know that Toyota can give you a bit longer on the stint tomorrow on the fuel. So we know we need this pace to fight them tomorrow. But yeah, looking forward to it.
I just saw you and Andre looking at the times there, pointing at the speeds of yourselves and the Toyota. What were you saying?
Yeah, we just monitored the top speed. For sure, the wind is changing a lot. So we need to be in a good position for tomorrow to race them. And it looks like we are okay on the top speed. So this is very important for us. And it's going to be interesting because the first two sector, they are faster than us and we are faster in the last one, so it's going to be challenging and very interesting tomorrow.
Look forward to it. Thank
me
you.
Me too.
That's Louise Beckett asking the questions there. Nico Lapierre, Mathieu Vaxvier's teammate. Now yesterday the wind here was blowing up the front straight at about 30 kilometers an hour, sort of back towards the pit. Now it's turned round 180 degrees and it's pushing people into turn one. That's a 60k wind shift that has happened over the last couple of days, Johnny. And that's why people were struggling getting the cars slowed down into turn one. That's a heck of a lap by Mathieu.
I'm just trying to work out where and why they've gained that pace. Because checking the qualifying times from Spa, the 36 car was 2 seconds off the best Toyota. So they've gained a bit of time, clearly, by the fact that both cars have gained weight, with the Alpine less weight, but it's only 4 kilos, the difference. So did they just...
JP, let's go to Tom Blomqvist, who's on pole in LMP2. Louise has managed to catch up with him down in the Parc Fermé area.
Well, Tom Blomqvist, a fantastic run from you as well, just getting yourselves ready. You can hear me anyway, which is good, but we need you to put that on for the mic. You've got to be pleased with that, putting the 28 on pole in LMP2.
Oh, ecstatic. I mean, I didn't have a great build-up to qualifying in FP3. So, I mean, I was a little bit unsure what, you know, was capable of the car going into quali. But yeah, the thing was hooked up. To be honest, I drove a bit messy, but thankfully it was just enough. The team did a great job. Both cars are super quick, so the team has obviously got to be really, really, really happy with that. But, you know, today was just one part of the job. And, you know, we've got a long race tomorrow, 8 hours. So anything can happen. But I think we should be looking okay in the race as well. And, we'll knuckle down tonight. You know, make sure we do our analysis and hopefully have a very strong race tomorrow.
Great. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Thank you.
Tom Blomqvist talking to Louise Beckett, the 27-year-old from Cambridge, very much a GT specialist, having won in the Spa 24 Hours and regularly competing in all the kind of key GT events around the world, but raced at Le Mans last year in a GT car, and it's been since that event that he moved into prototypes. Clearly, it's been a good move for him so far, because a couple of good races under his belt, and now a pole position as well.
I wonder what repercussions this is going to have then. The pace here, we'll talk about it tomorrow, I'm sure, but there's a big meeting on Tuesday between all of the current and potential LMH, LMDH, the global prototype manufacturers, with the FIA, WEC and the ACO. And I've had it on good authority from a number of different sources from both sides of the Atlantic that I don't think they'd be slamming hands on tables, but I do think there are words. It's something, again, that Jim Glickenhouse has said. Look, you know, we can't really make our cars very much quicker. We certainly can't take very much more weight out of them. We can probably get a bit more power out the engine. But really, that's the wrong way to look at it. The LMHs have been designed to what was a difficult set of moving target type engineering regulations anyway. Surely it would be just much easier when the new LMP2s come along, if they come along, to slow this lot down and slow the next lot down. But easier said than done. But let's see. But I'll tell you one thing. There is another VAG brand, at least one more VAG brand, who, if they get the nod, there's a couple of things that all the manufacturers want. They want to race in more championships with LMDH in particular. LMH, I'm not sure they're worried about, although Glickenhaus, I'm sure, would like to. But LMDH on the new LMP2 chassis, they want to race in more championships to have more places to sell their customer cars. And if that happens, if they get the green light for that, I think we'll see some more announcements on top of the Dallara BMW that we've already heard about for IMSA, being driven by BMW North America. That we'll talk about that a little more, I guess, during the race tomorrow, because I remember BMW North America being instrumental in keeping the old BMW prototypes running for a good couple of seasons after the European and World Championship season, or the European... as it was then, effort had stopped. So interesting times and exciting times, I think, JP.
Yeah, and this is the period of time where we can afford to be getting excited, because so many great manufacturers are to be arriving in this championship and in the IMSA championship. And you've got the trickle down to look forward to as well, potentially in other massive races around the world as well. But it's just about kind of bridging the gap between where we are currently and that eventual point where we're going to have, in the later amount of tens, if you like, or just below sort of eight or nine manufacturers to be toying with in years to come. And it's very exciting that the rule set, either in the World Championship or the other side of the Atlantic for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, is generating interest, and that's desperately what we've needed for the last few years. So, something is working. It's just a question of waiting to get there. But I love how enthusiastic Jim Glickenhaus is. Clearly, we have seen the improvement through the sessions. He'll be disappointed with where the car ended up in that particular session, but should make fairly quick work of the LMP2s in the early stages. By the way, Richard Westbrook's time, a 1:31.752, comparing to the pole time, which is a 1:30.3.
Okay. That's, it's not a...
The car can go faster.
Didn't they do a 31 earlier on today?
Yes, they did. That might be the fastest time we've seen. So again, it is marked improvement. The problem is, of course, the Toyotas will have been holding back during free practice, and the Glickenhaus has sort of stayed where it is. But, we're talking about single lap pace, and a very different way of going motor racing tomorrow, which is an 8-hour affair, where reliability in warm weather will be key. And these Toyotas are brand new out of the box as well, so therefore susceptible to the odd thing breaking, you have to think. It's a funny thing when you do a 30-hour test and it goes seamlessly, but then when you get to proper competition, a much shorter run can result in problems.
I love the fact, by the way, that I think it was André Nagrin. No, it wasn't. It was Matt Vaxvier was being shown his lap by his teammates on the phone and pointing out where he'd missed the apex. Technology, yeah. You can't run and hide.
No.
Just a quick reminder before Johnny winds up and tells you all about the big race tomorrow. Stay tuned to the Radio Show Limited network of channels this evening, because we're not too far away over on RS2 and on imsaradio.com. Sound and vision for most of you, certainly if you're outside of the US here. We've got the Detroit Grand Prix, the Chevrolet GT Challenge, or Chevrolet Sports Car Challenge, should I say, from Belle Isle. That'll be Shea, Jeremy and me in about an hour, no, a little bit more than that, about an hour and a half. Go on to imsaradio.com. And then tomorrow, JP, at 21:30 London time, I'm being told we're up for that, for Countdown to Green. And
lovely.
Then tomorrow.
Tomorrow, Countdown to Green is a 10:30 local time start. So, I mean, local Portuguese time, Western European summer time, which is, well, GMT plus one, I suppose. If you're in Central Europe, remember, it's an hour back because Portugal sits, like the UK, an hour behind all other Central European countries. 10:30 start then, and then with an 11 o'clock race start for 8 hours, so through till 7 in the evening, and we'll have half an hour or so to mop things up afterwards and to chat through any discussion topics, of which there will be many, I'm sure, after 8 hours of racing. And it's at RSL_studio on Twitter to get involved with those. So round two, set up nicely of the World Endurance Championship, brought to you live here on RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. My thanks to John Hindhoff. He will be part of our coverage tomorrow as well, along with Bruce Jones. All the build-up then at 10:30. If you're not either in the UK or in Portugal, just head to RadioLeMans.co. And the clever little schedule at the very bottom of the page there will do the calculations. Just make sure that your system time is set to the correct one, and the website will do all of the rest of the hard work for you. We'll see you, therefore, tomorrow morning for the build-up for round two of the FIA World Endurance Championship. We'll see you then. Bye for now.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.